All right, here we go. Welcome to this edition of the Showcasing College Baseball Podcast, powered by College Recruit Prep. I'm your host, Ross Hawley, and I want to thank you for spending some time with us, wherever you might be watching or listening from. If this is your first time with us, welcome. Go give us a follow on our Facebook group page at Showcasing College Baseball, or visit us on the World Wide Web at collegerecruitprep.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Armilla Tech, pioneers in sports communication technology. Imagine a world where every play call is crystal clear, secure, and executed with precision. That's the world Armilla Tech has created. Trusted by top coaches across North America, Armilla Tech's innovative electronic play calling system is transforming how football, baseball, and softball games are being played one play at a time. Visit armillatech.com for more information. Now, on to today's episode and guest. I'm excited for this one, guys. Today's guest is easily one of the coolest guys in all of baseball. He's also one of the most knowledgeable guys in all of baseball, especially when it comes to the catcher position. I'll say it like this. Regardless of the profession we're talking about, you could be a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, whatever it might be. If you're universally known as the guy in what you do for a living, you're one of the best. Well, Todd Coburn is one of the best. He's the guy. More specifically, he's the catching guy. And he's got more followers on social media than Taylor Swift and Ronaldo combined. Todd, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Ross. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Man, I was looking through your Instagram here this morning. And you know what, Todd? We've known each other for about 10 years. And it blows me away how much content you have. And I get it. It's like a regenerating, never ending flood of content to teach and coach, but it blows my mind how much content you're able to come up with catching. So as the catching guy, I want to lead off with this. I'm really curious. You've been around for a long time. Everybody knows you as a catching guy. You're one of the most sought after catching instructors in all of baseball. So I want to know, how did it all start? Give me some background on Todd Coburn. How you became the catching guy.
So I could go as far back as how I became a catcher if you want.
Let's do it.
Kind of a funny story. So I'm sure some listeners are ADD like myself. I was that ADD kid. They put me in the outfield. Yeah, they put me in the outfield because I was pretty fast and I had a good arm, but I couldn't pay attention. I'm out there playing with the ants and the grass and watching birds fly by and airplanes almost getting hit by the ball. So my coach was a genius back then. He said, "Hey, Todd, you know what? I want you to throw the gear on. You have to pay attention when you got the gear on. You're going to get smoked in the face with the ball." So I put that gear on. I felt like a gladiator with all that stuff on. I was like, this is really cool. And it helped my focus. I became ultra focused, what you have to be as a catcher. And so the rest is history. I was a catcher my entire career. Once I was done playing, I got into coaching. And in coaching, it's a lot of who you know and not what you know. And I just moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I didn't know anybody. I thought I'm going to start doing some lessons at one of the baseball schools in the area. Started doing some lessons, and I fell in love with working with the kids. This was in 2000, so it's been almost 25 years now. So for about 25 years, I've been doing camps and clinics and lessons with kids. And then more recently, it's been about 8 years ago now, I just finished up one of my fall break camps, and I was sitting in my office and not burnt out by any means. I absolutely love what I do, but I was like, for lack of a better word, kind of bored with it. I've been doing it for so long. I was like, I gotta mix it up. I gotta do something different. And I was sitting there thinking, my catching camp that I do every summer is my favorite camp. I get so excited for the catcher's camp. I have such a passion for the position. It's like, you know what, I'm gonna start doing just catching stuff. And so I sat there at my desk and I thought, I'm just a passionate catching guy. I just love catching. I'm the catching guy. And I was like, oh, it's got a little ring to it. So I typed it into social media. No one had the name. So I started a page. Again, this was about 8 years ago. And I just started posting. You know, I'd watch a game on TV and see a teaching moment. Sometimes I'd film it. Sometimes I'd find something online to use as a teaching moment. And I post it, and people just really started vibing with what I was posting. And I went from zero followers to about 10,000, I think, in the first month.
Dang.
And then I just kept that process going. And now we're on, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. And I think I'm close to, I'm not at Taylor Swift and whoever else said yet. But, yeah, I think I'm just over 200,000 over all the platforms, something like that. So it's been fun for sure.
You know what? That is for all the, you know, these days you hear, you know, social media is, it's kind of has a negative connotation at times to it. Did you ever in your wildest imagination, when you're catching like in college and professionally and you're doing your thing, did you ever have an inkling that this is what your life would become? Because, and I'll go to the idea of the social media, man, Todd, I could just follow your stuff and I think I could make myself a good catcher. Did you ever imagine this stuff would come down the pipeline?
You know, absolutely not. Obviously, social media wasn't a thing back when I was in college. So, you know, I wanted to play as long as I possibly could. I knew when I was playing, I knew when the playing days were over, I wanted to coach. And again, my initial plan was to coach in college. I coached at Cuesta Junior College, Cal Poly, College of Southern Idaho. And then, like I said, I moved to Atlanta. And it's who you know, not what you know. I didn't know anybody. Even when I first got there, I think Facebook was just starting around the late 90s, I believe, right? And that's when I got out to Atlanta. And so even then, social media wasn't really a thing. And yeah, I mean, it's I knew I wanted to coach. I knew I had a passion for teaching and working with kids. And social media just took it to a whole other level. It changed my life. It changed everything. I was just a local guy here in Northern Nevada doing my local camps with the kids and absolutely loving it. And then again, started social media pages, and no kidding, probably 3 months after I started my social media page, I got invited to speak at CatcherCon. Shortly after that, I got invited to speak at an ABCA Barnstormers event in San Francisco. Shortly after that, I got invited to speak at the ABCA. Shortly after that, I got asked to speak at Be the Best. So I started speaking at conventions 3 or 4 or 5 months after just starting a social media page. And Insta was the first one. Then I jumped to Facebook, and then I finally got on Twitter. And then more recently, again, YouTube and TikTok. And never in my wildest dreams thought that that's where it would take me. And now I've been to 40 states in Canada in the last 8 years to do catchers only camps.
Man, that is amazing. And I've actually witnessed one of your camps out in Reno. And guys, I'm telling you, it's I have sons. I say this often, but I would want my son, if one of them is a catcher and he will go, but the how thorough you are in the approach, in the breakdown, you cover everything in these camps. And we'll get into that here in a little bit, but I'm curious because I played shortstop in college. I pitched in college and I wasn't a catcher. Just put it this way. I was too scared to catch and I took a foul tip off of my wrist when I was in eighth grade, and I said, "This is stupid." It was a breaking ball in the dirt, and I thought I was going to be all big and drop down and break it. Kid foul tips it right into my wrist. I'm like, "This is dumb. I can't do this." I want to get into the qualities of a catcher because to me, man, it is a commitment. And I think in all of sports, I think catching is probably the most physically taxing, as well as mentally taxing on the athlete. So that said, qualities needed to be a catcher, Todd. What would you say to that?
So that's actually the first thing I talk about after I introduce myself at all of my camps is I call it the characteristics of a successful catcher. And I think first and foremost, you got to be able to play the position, right? So you got to be able to catch the ball. You got to be able to block it if the pitcher bounces. You got to be able to make that throw consistently. So the physical skills, those are kind of a given. I think you obviously got to play the position. But if you want to stand out at a showcase, at a tryout, if you want to be the guy, it comes down to leadership qualities. And as you were just saying, physical toughness and mental toughness. So with leadership, there's all kinds of different components to being a leader. You know, there's game savvy, just understanding the game, right? We're behind the plate and we have everything in front of us. And the way I explain it to the kids in my camps is not only do we have to understand our responsibilities, but we're supposed to know what everyone else is supposed to do too. And we're going to be directing traffic and telling guys where to go and screaming who's cut and, you know, what base to throw to. And, you know, reminding how many outs is a huge component, you know, being a good communicator, communicating with our pitching staff, helping our pitchers both with their mechanics and their emotional state, making sure, you know, they're staying on track, both physically and mentally, communicating with the coaching staff, you know, throughout the game, the umpire zone, the umpire's emotional state. Are they grumpy? Are they out there? Because we want to let coach know he might have a short fuse kind of thing. And then that said, you know, communicating with the umpire throughout the game too. I always tell the kids, your first time out on defense, you need to introduce yourself and shake that umpire's hand and be, you know, become, get on a first name basis with them and become buddies with them is really your goal. And just having that positive relationship with the umpire. So, again, I could keep going and going on the leadership qualities, but I think the big ones are the game savvy and then just being a good communicator. And then, the physical toughness, again, it's hard to explain. I've always had a challenge putting it into words. It takes a unique personality to deal with the pain that happens with the position, right? You have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. The days that a catcher feels 100% healthy and good are super rare. There's almost always something hurting. Sometimes it's our hand from catching you catch one pitch wrong, you get that bone bruise and it's with you the rest of the season, right?
Wow.
Taking the foul tip or blocking one off your wrist, you know, getting I call it catcher's ink, getting the seam marks on your arm. you know, the squatting, I always put it this way. Every time you see a pitcher's pitch count, that's a catcher squat count. We have to, you know, wow. If you have a starting pitcher throw 50 pitches, they leave the game. A reliever comes in, they throw 50 pitches, they leave. Another reliever comes in, they throw 50 and leave. They all threw 50 pitches. We made 150 pitches and we did 150 squats, right? Mm-hmm. Or we made 150 throws and did 150 squats. So, again, just the taxing of the position, it just takes a unique person. And for whatever reason, like when I was a kid, pain never made me want to curl up and cry. It would fire me up, right? And so I think I was perfectly built to be a catcher where, you know, I'd take a foul tip off the mask and it'd make my ears ring, but I'd be like, I'm good, let's keep going. You know, take one off the wrist and my hand would go like this for a second and I'd get the feeling back in my fingers and I'd jump right back in. Like, I just – it takes, again, a unique personality and a little – probably a little craziness in there too.
Yeah.
Again, that's one of the things you'll see is these catchers, they get beat up, but they just jump right back in there. So – So back to your kind of initial question, you know, you gotta have the physical tools. You gotta be a great communicator, be a leader out there, know and understand how to run that pitching staff and, be the field general, run that whole ship, run that whole field. And then the physical toughness as well. And then again, just to touch on the mental toughness. Like I said, we're not only thinking for ourselves, but we're thinking for everyone else too. And we're, you know, sometimes coach calls pitches depending on the level you're at. So that kind of, you know, eases up a little bit of what's going on in our brain. But if we're calling our own game and trying to, you know, communicate with the team and communicate with the umpire and know who the next batter is and even the batter in the hole is and what they've done their last at bats and, you know, all that kind of stuff, it's both physically and mentally exhausting. But it's, again, it's where the action is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You got to, man, I'll tell you this much. The reason why I love the game of baseball is there are so many games within the game. And when I hear people say it's a boring game, that just tells me they've come nowhere close to understanding what's really going on a field. And then I listen to you about catching, like it gives me stress to think like that is a straight up coach out on the field. That's what it is. I'm curious, the position has changed, as everybody knows, and you see it all over social media, all these experts, you know, with their opinions. I'm curious for you, Todd Coburn, talking with the catching guy here, guys. I'm curious what your thoughts are on the evolution of the position of catcher, getting on the knee, you know, the new styles, however you want to call it. What are your thoughts on the evolution of how the position of catching has changed?
So I can tell you, like most ball players from my era, you know, I just turned 52. So I was very hesitant and stubborn, I guess you could say. You could call me old school, whatever you want to be. So when all these changes started happening, like I didn't even like instant replay coming into the game. Yeah, I just let the umpires making mistakes has always been part of the game, the human element, right? And all that. And I loved it. As frustrated as I was as I used to get with some of the umpires, you just have an understanding that's part of the game. So even when, you know, instant replay came in, I was like, ah, I hate it. So real hesitant, again, stubborn, whatever you want to call it. But the more people I met in the game, the more conventions that I spoke at and listened to the speakers, the more social media pages I started following and really listening to these coaches at the highest level, the coordinators and managers and that. It's funny, but they found a better way, right? Just like anything else in life, you got to adapt and grow and develop. Wow. and evolve. And they found a better way for catchers to conserve energy, for catchers to get more strike calls. excuse me. I'm at the tail end of a cold, so I'll be sipping on my water. I might pop a few times up.
Have at it, my friend. No, I am because I look at the getting down on the knee and the kind of the new way of catching. It does look more comfortable to me. But I sit there and I watch and I'll see someone spike something and there's no chance that they can get it. But I also, to that point, I'm like, well, maybe he didn't have a chance to block it anyway, right? Because it was such a bad pitch. So continue on what you were saying.
Yeah, so 100%. And that's actually what I was going to start to touch on is, believe it or not, and there's a whole bunch of people out there who would battle. It's a constant battle on my social media. People comment all the time and I try and do my best to be respectful and give them a nice educated answer. And then they'll come right back with, no, it's lazy. I'm like, no, listen, it works. And, you know, the way I try and explain it is at the highest levels, they film everything. They film every pitch of every game at every level. You got the big leagues, AAA, AA, long season A, short season A, and most have some type of rookie level somewhere down in the Dominican, whatever. They film every pitch of every game. Mm-hmm. And then it's the coordinator's job, right, and their staff, the analytics that's come into the game over the last, you know, 8 to 10 years, it's their job to analyze that video they watch. And where was the pitch in relation to the strike zone? What did the catcher's mitt look like during that reception? What did it look like during the presentation? How much did they move? And obviously, most importantly, what did the umpire call it, kind of thing? Mm-hmm. They analyze, okay, there was a ball in the dirt. Was it inside the body frame of the catcher? Was it just outside? Was it an extreme miss? And then they record, was it blocked? Was it picked? Was it missed? Was it a ricochet? It bounced and hit the catcher and kicked off to the side. They keep track of release times and flight times and pop times. And what they found, and that's why you're seeing all of the best on TV, 99% of them are on a knee. Wow. Literally 100% of the game. Like, there's some that, you know, certain situations, certain pitch type calls, certain pitchers, some guys prefer to be on their feet. But even when they're on their feet, it's not a guaranteed block. It's not a guaranteed throw out. So, and I guess what it's come down to is, you know, and the way I explain it at camp is we, as a catchers now, we want to put ourselves in the best position to get a strike call while still being able to perform any of the responsibilities that might happen. So getting on a knee, you know, taking away that low strike reference point, getting us lower to the ground, you know, changing our eye levels, getting down to the bottom of the strike zone, all that stuff. It's getting more strikes. So they're getting on a knee. They're adjusting foot position and body weight position and everything so that they can still get up and make the throw. They can still make a block, but they're putting themselves in the best position to get that strike call. So, man. And I guess to go back to your initial question, you know, I was very hesitant. But again, the more people I talked to, the more conventions I went to, and the more I just paid attention and started to really look into the numbers and analytics, it's proving to work. So, you know, it's either evolve with the game or get passed up.
Man, I love that. I really do love that. And coming from you and knowing, like, you are an old school, hard nosed, like, you're a baseball guy. Sure. And I love hearing that. That's what it's about, guys. It's about evolution. It's about changing with the times. So I'm curious kind of along those same lines is, I have a young catcher. We start working this type of stuff. When is it, will this generation, like, will the younger generation now, they'll never really know what it was like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, because this is going to be their standard of catching. So is that an accurate statement? And when do you start with all of the kind of those one knee down styles?
Sure. I think you're exactly right that there's a lot of kids that just won't know what it used to be. To your point on when do you start? So our average age at our events is 12, 13 years old, but we'll go as young as 9, 10 year olds. We've had several 17, even an 18 year old show up before. But that 12 to 13 year old average age, the way I said at camp is getting on a knee or knee down setups are not for everybody. You have to have some good hip mobility, you know, flexibility and strength. You have to have some athleticism about you to be able to get on a knee, but then still be athletic enough to move, you know, to go get pitches, even just pitches in the air, just to catch pitches in the air, to catch misses. You know, you're set up on one side of the plate, they throw it to the other. Some kids, they see, you know, these big league catchers kicking out and going into a full kickstand like a JT Realmuto, and then their pitcher throws it over their foot that's sticking out to the side, and they can't get there. They just don't have the athleticism, strength, and mobility yet. And it's usually it's pretty obvious. I can actually tell the kids that are going to be just fine in a knee down setup just after warm up, just watching them do what we do during warm up, and we'll do squat walks with them and stuff. And I can see the kids that have restrictions, and then I watch them during the drill work, and I'll just be blunt and honest with them. I think they need to hear that. It's like, hey, you're definitely a candidate for getting on a knee. You're going to be just fine. Cool. You need to work on your athleticism, your fitness level, your mobility a little bit before you get on a knee consistently. So start working on that, work on it in the bullpen. And then when you have that athleticism and you develop a little more strength, then you can start incorporating it into a game. Cause some of the kids will get on a knee and they just get locked in place just because they've never been taught how to do it correctly. Yeah. And again, they're still developing. They're just not strong enough. It's not for everybody. But you'd be amazed, Ross, how many of these kids, I've had 10-year-olds get on a knee and we'll bounce balls in the dirt at them, and the athleticism and the amount of lateral movement they still have, it blows me away how good some of them are at it.
It is it's so cool. I mean, I'm just, everything you're saying, I'm picturing in my head, and I'm like the JT Realmuto, if I'm a catcher and I got my kickstand out and that guy goes, oh, I'm like, I feel like I just pulled a hamstring trying to even like attempt to catch that in my head. Exactly. I want to touch on something, because I know you understand how mental preparation and training is just in baseball and catching. And really what I want we're talking with Todd Coburn, the catching guy here today, guys. And what I want you to help our audience understand, I want this to be as educational as we can, because, you know, your time is valuable. And I want to understand what your approach, how important is mental training for baseball, for the catching position? When do you start? What do you do? What's your take on mental preparation for catching in baseball in general?
So I am, I'm huge on the mental side of the game. I think we may have talked about this before. My lack of mental toughness was really the ultimate demise of my career, right? I turned myself into a really good baseball player, big, strong, athletic, you know, but if I struck out, if I made an error, even if a teammate made an error, if my pitcher walked a batter, couldn't find the strike zone, I would really get frustrated really easy. Has something to do with my ADD and just the way my brain is wired. You know, we have always, ADD people have a challenge controlling their emotions. But for me, for whatever reason, it was to an extreme where, again, it ended up being just the ultimate demise of my career. I couldn't handle the failures that were built into the game. So the way I explain it at camp, and it sounds funny putting it this way, but I tell the kids, you have to practice failing. Like, when you fail, don't see it as the end of the world and I'm terrible and, you know, I just lost a game for my team. Like, learn from it. I say get focused, not frustrated. Okay, why did I mess up? So sometimes, let's use a strikeout as an example. You strike out. Sometimes you have to go put your gear on and get right back behind the plate because you were the third out of that half inning and you got to get ready to catch. So you don't really have time to process it. But if you have some time, when you get to that bench, you know, without throwing your bat and helmet, you don't have to be happy about it, but control your emotion, put your stuff away, but then sit down and just kind of try and process. Again, get focused, not frustrated. Why did I strike out? Did I turn my head? Did I overswing? Was I late? Did I get my foot down? Like, try and figure out what happened in the process that created that negative outcome, and what can I do different next time? And the way I explain it to the kids too, there's going to be times where it's a streak. Like I've had a game where I was 0-for-5 with 5 strikeouts.
Ooh.
I've had a game where I was 3-for-3 with 3 home runs and 9 RBIs. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? You'll have all these ups and downs, and it's easy to keep a smile on your face and your head up high and your chest bowed out when things are going good. It's how you react when things go bad that matters. That's going to be the difference maker, right? And actually, that's, since we're talking to probably a lot of younger players right now, scouts and coaches come out and watch. And, you know, some kids, they'll go 0-for-4 that day, 0-for-3, 0-for-4, and they think it's the end of the world. I had these scouts here watching me, and I did that. No, how did you handle those failures? They watch for that. They don't mind seeing guys have bad games. Bad games happen for everybody. It's how you react to those bad games. Did you throw your bat? Did you, you know, slam down your helmet? Did you yell at the umpire? Did you yell at your opponent? Like, they, you know, get focused, not frustrated. Why did I mess up? What can I do differently? And control your emotions, whether it's, again, a defensive thing. Why did I make that throw out in the center field? Did I overstride? Did I fly open? Did I, you know, lose track of my head and yank it to the side? My arm cast it, like, figure out what you can do differently. And move on from it and understand, you know, you're going to fail. It's going to happen. It's going to happen a lot. There's probably more failure than successes in the game, especially in the offensive side of things. So it's something that you have to practice failing. You have to figure out, get used to it, get comfortable with it, and figure out what you can do differently the next time.
Man, Todd, that is really, really good stuff. Todd Coburn, the catching guy we're talking with here, guys. Todd, I know you and I have had multiple conversations about this, but I want to kind of reiterate and I want to reinforce, you know, what Todd is saying is the mental preparation for me. I look back at my career and there's no question. I physically did everything I could to be that dude physically. I didn't prepare for the adversity and I'm good with how everything, you know, turned out great. But if I could do it over again, or I get asked this a decent amount with sons that play the game, what will you focus on with your boys? And I'm like, I want them to have fun and I want them to enjoy the game. They will become who they want to become physically if they want to enjoy it, if they love the game. But what I would really emphasize with my young guys is what you just said, preparing. Prepare to fail, embrace the failure, understand that, like, just like balls and strikes in first base and second base and center field, just like it's a part of the game. It's built into the game. And I never really understood that. Is there anything else you can kind of, do you see the young guys that have it, that have that mental toughness at an early age?
You most definitely do. There's several kids that have attended camp or I've worked with in the past where they just get it, right? And sometimes I'll jokingly say, it's not necessarily politically correct or the nice way to put it, but they're just dumb enough to not understand how tough the game really is. They just play, right? And those kids that just play, and like you said, just have fun with it, those are the ones in my experience that continue on in the game and excel and succeed and just keep moving up. It's the ones that dwell on the failures, right? They focus on the outcomes instead of the process, right? And there's that everyone in the game talks about as far as the mental side, just play, you know, next pitch, pitch to pitch. Every pitch is just a whole new situation. And I think a good way to, whether I'm catching or hitting or out there a shortstop or in the outfield, I think it's not necessarily something that I'm a saying that I invented, I'm sure it's out there, but pre-pitch preparation, right? Go pitch to pitch, and before each pitch, prepare yourself. And the more you practice it, the more it just becomes, you know, you're an autopilot. It's a second instinct. Like, it's, all right, for this pitch, he just threw me a fastball up underneath my hands. He's probably going to go off speed this time. So I'm going to prepare myself to stay back and go, you know, opposite field. Or if I'm catching, all right, so last pitch, we threw that low breaking ball. Now I'm going to elevate a fastball, but I do have a runner on first that might go. So when I set up, I'm going to make sure I'm in a position where I can make a throw quickly while still getting that strike call if needed, if the runner doesn't go. So just prepare for each pitch, play pitch to pitch, and that pre-pitch preparation will will help eliminate a lot of the mental mistakes and frustration that comes with when things don't go as planned.
Man, that's really good stuff. Really good stuff. I'm curious. So if there's young guys out there that there will be listening to this, in young guys that want to, hey, I'm 10 years old, I'm 12, I'm 13. I want to be a big leaguer someday, and I want to catch in the big leagues. What's your advice for young catchers with those big dreams? What does the day to day grind really look like?
That's another topic that we discuss at every camp. And I can't remember what day of camp when you came out to the one here in Reno, what day you got, what talk you got to hear. But I tell my story. So when I was younger, I didn't start playing until I was 8. I was a pretty athletic kid. I could run really fast. I always had a really good arm. Decent bat speed. If I ran into one, I could hit it pretty hard, but I swung and missed a lot. Like athleticism, I had some tools, but I wasn't a very good baseball player. I never made All-Stars growing up. I just flat out wasn't good enough. I got cut from the team my freshman year of high school. Flat out wasn't good enough. Made the junior varsity team my sophomore year. I played almost every game because I was coach's best option. But I always say I was average Joe at best. Made varsity my junior year. Of course, I was stoked. Yes, varsity player. I ended up being the bullpen guy. I just warmed up pitchers all season long. I think I got 9 at-bats my entire junior year. So the point of the story is, to get to your question, I was thinking, man, funny thing is, I wasn't very good, but there was nowhere else I'd rather be than on a baseball field and behind the plate. Like, I just fell in love with the game, fell in love with the position, but I never practiced. I never put in any focused practice. Mm-hmm. Like, my practice, my extra work was going and playing wiffle ball with my buddies, right? And sure, there's some benefits to wiffle ball, right? Or playing home run derby down in the Little League field, or, you know, back then we used to play pickle all the time. So, those goofy games that we played as kids, sure, there's benefits to them, but there was never any really focused practice. Like, throw me 25 curveballs in a row so I can try and hit them, right? I'm going to make 25 throws to second. I never really put in any extra time. I just goof off. So, again, to get back to your question, it's all about work ethic. You have to put in the time. You have to have that dedication, discipline to avoid the distractions. In between my junior and senior year, I flipped a switch in my brain. I'm like, look, Todd, talking to myself, you need a college scholarship. Your parents can't put you through college, right? My family wasn't very well off, so I needed to get a scholarship. And I've had these dreams and goals of playing professionally, but I'm not even playing for my high school team. Like, you better figure this out. And I think most guys who played at a high level will agree. You get to a certain level, and the training you become obsessed with. You become obsessed with being the best you can be. And it became an obsession for me. I practiced and worked out so much. My coaches and parents were like, you need to take a day off, Todd. I'm like, no, I've got goals. I've got dreams. And so at that age, I was old enough to get in the weight room. So I was lifting weights. If I wasn't lifting, I was running. If I wasn't running, I was hitting. If I wasn't hitting, I was throwing. If I wasn't throwing, I was doing some catches. I was doing something every single day. I can't tell you how many times, Ross, I call up my buddies. Hey, let's go hit. Nah, bro, we're going to Tahoe today. We're going to go up to the lake and chill out. I'm like, all right, I'll see you there when I'm done with my workout. And I'd go work out by myself. Again, I became obsessed with it. I just had this ultra-focused goal of, kind of living as they say, to live as if I was going to be a professional baseball player. And I made it happen. So, again, for all the kids that are listening, it's just about putting in the time. At camp, I always use a school day as an example for them. I'll tell them, you get home from school, what always comes first? A lot of the kids will say, after school snack. I'm right there with you. You got to eat something.
Pudding.
Most of them agree, homework. Your schoolwork always comes first, right? That's got to be a priority. If you don't get good grades, you don't play. It's academic ineligible. Yeah. So you get your after school snack. You get your homework done, right? And then, at my house when I was growing up, I always had chores I had to take care of around the house to get the chores done. But then do some type of workout. Do something that's going to make you better, right? And the cool thing nowadays, some of these kids will try and say, right now in Northern Nevada, I have about 6 inches of snow out on my yard right now. It snowed. Yeah, crazy, late, huge storm. So some kids would be like, there's snow on the ground. I can't practice. No, you have to, be disciplined, avoid the distractions, avoid the friends wanting to go to the lake, avoid the excuses of, there's snow on the ground. And at my camps, I'll show the kids literally probably 20 to 30 different exercises and drills they can do in the space of a batter's box. So if you can't get a ride to a facility, if it's too bad weather outside, just clear space in your room and do some hip mobility exercises, do some type of hand, wrist, and forearm strengthening exercises. Get on social media and watch my page, watch the videos on my page, do some video analysis, go to YouTube, punch in Buster Posey Catching and watch a bunch of videos of Buster. I don't know why Buster popped in my head. It just, he's a stud. So example, but you know, there's always something to do. So it's all about work ethic. It's about putting in that time and staying dedicated. Staying disciplined is one of the toughest parts. Avoid those distractions, avoid excuses. And if it's truly what you want to do, you can make it happen.
Man, I love that. I love that, Todd. You got me fired up, man. I kind of like want to go catch now, but I'm like, yeah, well, I'll calm myself down. Couple more minutes here with Todd Coburn, the catching guy. Todd, just really good stuff so far. And I'm just curious in general, because you've been around the game for so long and you see so many players and you've been around every level of the game. I'm curious, what's the best baseball advice you've ever received? I'm putting you on the spot.
Best baseball advice. I got a ton over the years, to be honest. I had a lot of really good coaches. Some of it was a little too little too late, or however that saying goes. Yeah. I wish I would have focused more on learning to control my emotions. I did go to a sports psychologist when I was in high school. My parents and coaches saw that side of me, and they're like, look, you've got some talent, but you got to get your head straight, get your mind right. And so I went to a sports psychologist, but my ego got in the way. I was too stubborn. I thought the stuff he was having me do was honestly just really weird. It was visualization. It was breathing techniques and all that kind of stuff. But again, my high school coach was like, you gotta learn to get your mind right. Great advice. I just didn't 100% buy into it. I did some of the stuff. I did do some visualization and some learning how to relax and that kind of stuff, but I just didn't stay disciplined on that side of things. I was always in the weight room. I was always throwing. I was always hitting. I was always training myself and turn myself into a really good baseball player, but I didn't train my brain. So the importance of training your brain was probably the best advice that I got. I just wish I would have followed through with it more, because I really did.
You know what's crazy is, like, if you're listening to this today or you're watching this, I want, and you're, take it from two men who have been around the game telling you, you can have all the physical talent in the world, but if you don't have it up here, no chance. None. You should be, what do they say? Baseball is 90% mental. If it's 90% mental, why are we training 2% of the time on the brain and 98% of the time, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
that I love that, Todd. I love that you understand. And that's why the reasons why I like you so much and your approach to the game. Like, it's crazy to think you out of control of your emotions, because I see you as this really cerebral guy when you're a coach. So that tells me you practice what you preach. I want to finish with this because, man, you impact the game. You impact so many lives. And I want everybody listening to this to have the opportunity to know more about you. And I want you to finish with this. Tell me a little bit about what we can look from the catching guy. Camp offerings, online programs. How can you help this audience become better at the catcher position?
Sure. So as I mentioned at the beginning, I've been to 40 states in Canada doing catcher-only camps. It took 8 years, but my wife and my son finally said, we miss you, Dad. Can you please be home a little bit more? So my point is, I'm not going to be traveling as much. I was doing on average 3 camps a month, and certain times of the year, it was 4 camps. So sometimes, like, my summer camps are 4 days long, right? So last summer I was gone, I think it was 9 out of 10 weeks I was gone on the road. The family did get to come with me for a couple, but again, my point is, I'm not going to be traveling as much. Instead of 3 or 4 a month, I'm going down to 1 or 2 a month. So if you look at my schedule now in 2024, I think I have 1 month going all the way to August where I'll have 3 camps, but the rest, it's usually just 2 camps at the most. I do a camp, take a break, so I can just be home more often. My whole point is, I'm dedicating a lot more time to, we have a membership that we do. It's called the Catcher's Toolkit, and it's every month the participants or members get a catcher themed shirt. And this one says, "We don't skip leg day." The banner's right across my chest. So I don't know if we can see it.
There it is.
You get a catcher themed shirt every month, and then some virtual catcher specific training. So I pick a topic every month. We actually sit down at the beginning of the year and we map out all 12 months of the year with the topic that we're going to, teach, the shirt theme, and have it all planned out. And then, the members, we have a dedicated Facebook page. I do Facebook Lives with them and I discuss the topic of the month, answer any questions anyone has. On that Facebook page, members can post videos and I'll give them feedback of what I'm seeing with their technique. So we have the Catcher's Toolkit is probably the best way. It's going to be the best way to train with me going forward. I will still do my camps, but again, sometimes the timing doesn't work. Sometimes the location doesn't work for everybody. So the easiest way is the Catcher's Toolkit. And then we're also dedicating a lot more time to my YouTube channel. I'm going to be growing that. Just the easiest way to get to more catchers. That's always been my goal, is help as many catchers as I possibly can. And I've really started to try and get to the coaches as well, coaches and even the parents. If I can get to the coaches, get to the parents, I can get to more catchers. But it's a lot more virtual stuff. So my social media, again, if you just search The Catching Guy on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube, my pages will pop up. So follow me there, as you were mentioning. I'm constantly posting. Most of the time it's instructional. Every once in a while, it's just a highlight reel. And then every once in a while, it's just a funny. But majority of the time, literally 75, 85% of what I post is all instructional stuff. So the social media, the Catcher's Toolkit. And I think I've said this to you before, I do so many camps, sometimes it's hard to remember where I'm going to be. I can tell you that at the end of the month, I'll be in Milwaukee. We still have a couple spots available there. Then I'm going to Portland, Oregon. Then I'm going to Kansas City. We have Houston coming up. And then we start to get into in Atlanta, and we start to get into my summer camps. Costa Mesa down in Southern California, Seattle, St. Louis. And I actually have some other locations in the works as far as live events go, my camps go. But virtually is really going to be the best way going forward, just because I'm trying to spend more time with my kid and my wife. So,
man, that totally understandable. And you know what? I love that the social media and the videos and the digital world we live in can connect you with that many people. So you're listening to this, guys. I really encourage you to go give Coach Todd Coburn a follow. Again, Todd, I really appreciate your time today, man. I look forward to seeing you hopefully sometime soon. Any final words for our audience today?
Well, thanks for having me. First and foremost, like you just said, the virtual world is crazy. How many people were able to reach and get out there. People sitting in the comfort of their own home and listen to us talk. You're in Texas, I'm in Nevada. It's just wild how it all works. Just like we're saying, anyone who's listening, if you truly want to make it to that next level and maybe more importantly, stay and succeed at that level, it's all about the work ethic, putting in the time. And I'm happy to help anyone who wants to listen.
That's great stuff. Great stuff. Again, hey, I want to thank Todd Coburn for taking some time to talk with us today. Go give him a follow on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and visit thecatchingguy.com for information on upcoming camps and all of his digital offerings. I'm your host, Ross Hawley, and on behalf of Showcasing College Baseball, I want to thank you for listening. Be sure to follow the Showcasing College Baseball group page on Facebook or visit us at collegerecruitprep.com for more of our podcasts and content. We will see you next time.